Welcome to another rousing edition of the Pipeline Podcast. Jonathan Mayo, along with Jim Callis, our fearless navigator, Tim McMaster. We don't even have Matt Waymeyer here to help us out. So Jim and I are going to do the best we can here to muddle through and not step on each other's toes too much. We're going to spend all of this podcast talking about the Arizona Fall League, of course. Now in its second week, and I was out there for just about a week, and Jim is out there now. And to kick things off, we're going to start by talking to someone who's got a great view every day from the dugout of the Peoria Javelinas, and that's their manager, Jared Sandberg. Jared, welcome to the Pipeline Podcast. Thank you for taking some time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Wanted to just start out with just your take of the overall talent. You just finished your second year of managing the Durham Bulls and the AAA International League, and just get a sense of what you've seen overall in terms of the talent level in the Fall League over the first now almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, this is my first experience in the Arizona Fall League, so everything's kind of new to me as far as how everything works. And you know, being in AAA the last couple of years, getting around some of the younger talent in the industry, different organizations, some other organizations I haven't seen. So I'm extremely excited to be here and to see the young prospects. And, you know, there are some exciting prospects here, guys with tremendous power, bat speed, you know, some infielders that can pick it, some guys that can run. And then, you know, we've seen a couple of the young live arms throughout the league, you know, guys touching 100. It's very, very exciting.
Jared, I've talked to players about how long it takes them to get acclimated to the Fall League. How long does it take you as a manager to get acclimated to the Fall League? Because, you know, as you said, I mean, you're probably familiar. I don't know if you've managed any of the Rays players in the minor leagues, but you're at least familiar with them. But, I mean, you've got four other organizations worth of players, and you've got to juggle playing time for all these guys, you know, schedule pitchers, you know, alternate, you know, players at different positions. Do you feel like now that we're, I guess, about a week and a half into the Fall League, you've got that down? How difficult is it as a manager to stay on top of all that stuff?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. You know, you got 38 players to, you know, juggle from innings pitch standpoint, make sure they get the proper rest and follow the organizational protocol. You know, you're trying to get, you know, the guys in the lineups and at bats and juggle the different positions they can play. So coming into it, you know, I knew it was going to be a pretty fun task as trying to be organized, and you definitely got to be on top of your game as far as being organized. And fortunately for me, I got a tremendous staff that's able to support me and help me with that. You know, Brent Brown, the hitting coach, Justin Lord, and Pete Zamora, the pitching coaches that are here, they're extremely organized and detailed. So they've been a huge help for me, helped me with the lineups, helped me with the innings, you know, mapping out the pitching for the week and all that stuff. So when you have a good support staff like that, it definitely makes things a lot easier. And like I said, I knew it was going to be a tough task coming in. And we have this big, huge dry erase board, which I learned how to use in the AAA ranks because of all the movement in AAA going to the big leagues. And so we went right to the dry erase board when we first got here, started mapping it out. It was just an easy way to, you know, cross off names, erase names, and move guys around the board. So we've kind of used that in an essentially located spot to keep everybody organized.
John, before we – I want to ask, you know, I know Jim does too, about, you know, specific guys that you've seen, you know, in your dugout and around the league. But one of the things that doesn't, you know, get as much attention, everyone talks about the success rate of the Fall League in terms of players making it up to the big leagues. There have been more than a few who are in your position right now who have helped use that the Fall League as a springboard as a manager. How much do you think this you know, will help you in terms of, you know, what I'm assuming is your ultimate goal is to run a team at the major league level?
Yeah, this is a tremendous platform for me to you know, showcase some managerial skills, whether it's the communication with the players, you know, getting to know other people in other organizations, you know, as far as meeting new people, which I've met a ton of people, and it's great for me. As far as managing the game out here, I don't think there's a whole lot of managing the game just because, you know, the players are going to play and all that, so everything's pretty mapped out. But I think some of the other skill sets are going to be there as far as, like I said, the communication and the organization. And, you know, and then the players talk, too. I mean, the players talk to agents. Players talk to, you know, farm directors and coordinators and coaches and all that stuff. So this is a tremendous platform for me to, you know, not only, you know, hone the managerial skills that I want to do, but also, you know, meet people. And I'd love to be a big league manager at some point. And I know that still pretty young and I have a lot to learn. So the stuff that I've learned out here in these first couple weeks definitely is going to help me going forward.
Jared, I want to ask you about some of the players on your roster. I mean, every one of these rosters in the league is loaded with prospects. And looking at your position players, I guess the group that jumped out to me the most was the outfielders. I mean, you have the guy who might be the best power hitter in the league in Tyler O'Neill. You have a center fielder who probably has all-around tools that stack up with just about anybody in the league in Michael Geddes. And then you have Justin Williams, who's been one of the hottest hitters in the early going. I think he's hitting 400 last time I checked, with five extra base hits in as many games. Seems like you have a lot of outfield talent. What have been your initial impressions of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I know you guys have been chomping the bit to talk about the individual players, so this is a good platform. But, we should start with Tyler O'Neill. You know, I've never seen him play. I know he had a really good year in the Southern League this year. In Double A, and coming in here, he's stayed hot. You know, a guy with tremendous power, with some swing and miss. But you know, if he connects, it's going to go a long way. And he puts on a good show in BP as far as, you know, driving the ball in gaps and hitting the ball to the ballpark center field. But he hit a monster home run the other day in Glendale. I think Jonathan was there to witness that. So I mean, you're talking about a big, strong, physical guy. You know, he can run a little bit. Also, yesterday, you know, via infield single in the six hole, stole the base. So, you know, he's showcasing his talents. And then, you know, defensively, he's not that far behind. You know, he's running some decent routes, getting some good jumps, and tracking some balls down in the outfield. And, you know, he showed a decent arm in right field, too. So, I mean, I think the Mariners should be excited about what they have. And Tyler, you know, I know Scott Service is out here this week watching him play. So, got to see him play, and yeah, Tyler's done very, very well. And then, you know, Michael Geddes, here's a guy that, you know, hits the top of the order. I'm not sure exactly where he would profile in a batting order, but, you know, he can do it all. He can run, he plays center field, steal a base, hit for some power. He definitely gets to his full power, and, you know, we've been watching him play, and we're like, you know, who does he look like? Who does he look like? And everybody keeps saying Mike Trout, so anytime you can get compared to Mike Trout, it's definitely a huge compliment. So I think it's pretty special for Michael. And then definitely with Justin Williams, getting off to a really good start. I've never seen him play other than a brief stint in the Midwest League when I was in the opposing dugout when he was still with the Diamondbacks and playing for South Bend. But, you know, he's got the three triples so far. Like you said, he's hitting 400. Off to a good start, and when people are asking questions about certain players, they're going right to Tyler O'Neill and Michael Geddes, but then they follow right back up with Justin Williams, and you know, he's going to be a special talent, and he's eager to learn, which is exciting for us and the Rays organization. He's a hard worker, and like I said, with tremendous talent, so I think it's exciting. The future is bright for the Padres, Mariners, and Rays from an outfield standpoint.
I want to flip over to pitching a little bit, and as we were recording this, you told us that you were watching Brent Honeywell, who's the top pitching prospect in your organization, throw a bullpen. He's scuffled a little bit his first two outings. Well, can you tell us a little bit about what he has struggled with in those two outings? Very small sample size, obviously, after a really good year that saw him reach Double A for the first time.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, he's here to work on a few things, and one thing he's really trying to hone in on is that attacking with the fastball and really concentrating on focusing on that fastball command. And so with him, you know, throwing a bunch of fastballs to some hitters that are, you know, dead red and looking for that fastball, they've hit some homers off him. But, you know, I think there's been some times when he's, you know, really looked to go to the secondary pitches a little bit too much at times with two strikes going for the strikeout when he could have just stuck with the fastball. But, again, we're talking about a top pitching prospect that has a plan while he's out here in the Arizona Fall League. And, you know, he's going out there and working on some stuff. So I'm sitting here watching him right now. He's again, he's working on that fastball all quadrants of the strike zone and really working on that changeup. And, he'll definitely turn the corner. He's a special talent, good kid, he's eager to learn, ask good questions as well.
One of the pitchers who I had not heard a lot about, but that people have been buzzing about a little bit, I've yet to see you guys play in person, Jared, is Thiago Vieira of the Mariners. Had you heard much about him before you got the managerial job? But people have been buzzing that he's been one of the hardest throwers in the league. I think he was clocked at, 102 or 103 the other day.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. A guy that has got some deception in the delivery, definitely a big arm and a high velocity. We're sitting in the dugout. You just hear that ball whistling as it gets to the plate. And then you're expecting this big time fastball. And the other day, he ended the game a 12-2 game in Mesa. We were winning 12-2, and he struck out the guy on a 3-2 breaking ball. So he brings out this breaking ball. So definitely a pleasant surprise, and a guy that's flipped the switch for the Mariners organization here in the last couple of years, and really found something and turned it around. And anytime you can find a hidden gem like that that can touch 100 and spin a breaking ball, it's definitely special.
Last question for me, and just to turn away from Peoria for a little bit. I know you haven't seen a lot of other teams as the league has not been going on for that long, but have there been a couple guys that have really caught your eye, that the kind of guy that you stop and take a notice of the opponents you faced so far?
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing too is with as far as schedules go and playing time and all that stuff, we haven't seen Moncada play. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. So I've been texting back and forth with Fables, telling him to get him in the lineup when we play him. But and we saw Nick Gordon play yesterday for the first time. He's got a 6-8 game, I believe, and he can run. Pickett is shortstop, so I mean, you're talking about a guy up the middle in Nick Gordon who can really do it all. I really liked what I saw to him. And then overwhelmed a little bit as far as everywhere you look, every position, every team, it seemed like there's somebody out there. A guy that hit a huge home run the other day against us was Dodgers prospect Ellinger, first baseman. That was guy's got some bat speed and obviously some big league pedigree in his bloodlines.
Thanks, Jared. We really appreciate your time today. Look forward to – I have yet to run into the Javelinas yet, and I don't think I'm scheduled to on my brief 4-day trip, but I'll be back for 2 weeks toward the end of the season. Look forward to seeing some of your guys in action.
Well, we're a first-place team, so we're competing pretty well. We're playing the game pretty well, so hopefully you can make out to see us play.
All right, Jared, thanks very much for your time.
All right, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
So I don't know, one of the things that looking at the managers were, he mentioned Carlos Fables and even Sandberg himself. It's like I start to feel really, really old when guys that I remember when they were coming up and were prospects are now managing in the fall league. So feeling my age a little bit when I was out there for the first time.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's funny. I had the same thought because that was the first game I came to. Out here, in fact, Carlos Fables was one of the managers, and I had the same thought. Like, I remember when he was a Royals prospect and tearing up the Carolina League. I think I'm even a couple years older than you, although I don't think there's anything that makes you feel older, Jonathan. For some reason, I always think of Donovan Tate when I think of this, is when you have sons of players you covered as a young reporter who are now prospects, and that seems to be happening with more and more regularity. In the fall league, for instance, a good example of that is Cody Bellinger. I remember talking to his dad in my early days at Baseball America, doing a college feature on his dad when he was at Rollins. So it's, but I guess the older you get, and we're getting old, Jonathan, the more and more reminders you get of that as you go around covering baseball.
Yeah, I kept thinking that the time of the fall league, I was like, God, they keep getting younger and younger. Like every year, everyone looks so much younger in every house. No, it's the same age. We're getting older. But you mentioned Cody Bellinger. I think that's maybe a good place to start. We want to talk a little bit about some guys who have stood out. Jared Sandberg mentioned the big homer that he had against them. And he didn't even do that much in the couple times I saw Glendale, but his batting practice was very impressive. His swing is just so smooth. And he is definitely a hitter who I came away with wanting to see because I hadn't really seen much of him. But one of many guys on that Glendale team, there's a lot of good hitters on that team who at least I was impressed with my first go-around.
Yeah, and I've only been out for here for a couple of days. I saw Glendale yesterday, did not run into him, although he was very good when I was out here for spring training. My first game, I got to see Surprise versus Scottsdale, got to see Yoan Moncada in action. He did not do a whole lot that game. Saw him strike out a couple times, which he did in the big leagues as well. Walked late and got thrown out stealing. And Nick Gordon, who was leading the league in hitting at that time, was in that game too. But probably the best player my first night here, the best players were Mauricio Dubon of the Red Sox, who's adding center field to his resume. He's just I like him, Jonathan. He's not a top prospect, but he puts the bat on the ball and he does a little bit of everything. Not a big time power hitter, but he was impressive that night. He had three hits, and on the Scorpions that night, a couple of Yankees stood out for me. You know, neither one of them was really a surprise. Gleyber Torres had a couple of hits and looked like the precocious advanced hitter that he is. And on the mound, a short stint, but Dylan Tate. You know, the velocity was there. You know, we've heard reports of his velocity kind of fluctuating during the year, but I saw him 95, 96 with a mid-80s slider. So that first night here, that was the game I got to see. You know, I mean, and that's the thing about the Fall League, Jonathan, as you know, and I'm always telling people, you know, people who love baseball should come to the Fall League because you're going to see prospects no matter where you turn. It still boggles my mind that, you know, 60% of the players who play in the Fall League will reach the majors. So, I mean, if you think about that, you know, on a given night when you're talking about the pitchers, you know, each team will use four or five pitchers, you're probably seeing 30 players in a Fall League game. On average, 18 of those guys are future big leaguers. So if right. you like prospects and you like baseball, this is definitely the place to come.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Tate threw well because when I saw him, he did not throw well at all. You know, I didn't get radar readings on him. He seemed like velocity-wise was fine, but his command was way off, and he got knocked around quite a bit. I kind of think of it in the inbox I just read. I kind of split guys into two categories, and it may be overly simplistic, but you have the guys who are like the top prospects, and this is the first extended look. You get at them and you want to see if they kind of live up to that hype. And then they're the guys who are just sort of under the radar guys. So I'm glad you brought up, you know, guys who aren't necessarily the, you know, quote unquote bigger names. Gleyber Torres was so impressive in so many ways. You know, I don't know if you saw his batting practice, but he's one of these guys that spends at least the two times I saw him take batting practice. He was all right center field and up the middle. That's clearly what he was working on. And I saw him, he's hit a couple of balls the other way for extra base hits. But the last game I saw him in, you know, it's not like he's forgotten what to do if there's a fastball over the inner part of the plate. And he just crushed a ball to left center field out. And he's looked good at second base, which he had never played before, really, except for one game. So I think he's added that. So he's, to me, the example of that sort of top-notch prospect, who stood out. Harrison Bader is another guy from Glendale who just continued to perform and hit well. And then there's the under-the-radar guys, and I mentioned Ramon Laureano to you. He was the player of the week for the first week of the Fall League, and for good reason. He's, I think, 400 over his first seven games, 10 for 25. He's got four doubles and a pair of triples and four steals. And he's one of those guys that continues to sort of put himself on the map. I know you do the Astros list. You snuck him in at the end. He's one of these, you want to see what he does when he's not in Lancaster anymore. I know the Fall League is a hitter's league, but I think you're going to have to revisit his placement on the Astros top 30, based on what I saw anyway.
Yeah, no, he had a hot first week. I mean, he's a guy who has some tools. His speed's probably his best tool. The encouraging sign was he hit well in Double-A for a month at the end of the season, but right. You're having, and you've covered these guys for a while too. I mean, you have to take Lancaster numbers with a grain of salt. I covered Red Sox prospects for a while when they were there, and you can't just, I mean, I get Astros fans, you know, especially with AFL, why isn't this guy ranked higher? And it's like, well, we need to see a little bit more of him outside of Lancaster before we go crazy, you know. But he's so far 16th round pick in 2014, who has really asserted himself. And it's interesting because when I asked guys about him when we were doing our midseason revamp, Jonathan, they're like, you know, he's interesting, but like nobody was really, you know, banging a fist on the table like, hey, this guy's pretty good. And now you're hearing more and more of that. I actually got to see him play yesterday. You know, didn't do much in the early going. Got hit by a pitch early, and then a ground out and a strikeout. But then when we had a game that was threatening to go extra innings, and I had to get to a night game, made my two game day a little bit easier. So my thanks to Ramon Laureano for him. And, you know, like I said, he looked good in the brief look I saw him yesterday.
Now, I know you saw a couple good pitching performances yesterday. I saw Frankie Montas touch 101 at his first outing, and then he threw again yesterday. He's got four scoreless. And you also saw Chris Stratton go five. You know, Montas missed most of the year, so to see him back, the velocity is there. More importantly, or maybe most importantly, no walks over six innings. You know, looking like the kind of guy who could be pitching at maybe at the end of ball games in the not too distant future.
Yeah, and I don't think the A's have given up on him as a starter. It was good. You know, the fun part too is watching these guys play and then talking to them about what they're working on. And you know, Frankie yesterday, I'd seen him a few times out here a couple of years ago, and I've seen him in the big leagues a little bit. And you know, you could see him good, and you could see him not so good. I mean, I only saw him touch 100, Jonathan. You guys see 101. His slider was really sharp yesterday. And he threw strikes, as you mentioned, but there have been times where he doesn't throw strikes. And you know, depending on who you talk to when they see him, some guys, you know, look at it. You know, his big point of emphasis out here, besides getting some innings after missing a lot of the time with a rib injury, is working on a changeup, and he threw the changeup yesterday as well. But, you know, if you see him at his best, you think this guy might be able to pitch in the front half of big league rotation. And then other times when he's not throwing strikes and the slider flattens out, you think, well, this guy's not going to be able to get through the lineup more than once. You know, he's more of a closer, but it's a big arm. You know, the A's, you know, got him and Grant Holmes and Jarrell Cotton in that Rich Hill, Josh Reddick trade. That has a chance to be really nice for him. And then Stratton's another guy who I think people are still trying to figure out what his role is. You know, he was a first-round pick in 2012. And at the time, coming out of college, I mean, he was the SEC Pitcher of the Year. He had a fastball to hit 96. He had a wipeout slider. He was really dominant in a game that spring against LSU that a lot of scouts saw. And he really hasn't, as he's gone to pitching every fifth day, he hasn't been that same kind of stuff. It's been more of an average fastball. You know, this year his command was better than ever. He got a big league call-up as a reliever. His slider's more of an average pitch. He'll mix in a curve. He'll mix in a change. But I think the question is on him, you know, is he a guy who fits in the back of rotation, or is he more of a guy who fits in the bullpen? But yesterday, you know, he wasn't overpowering. It was kind of 89-93, but he was locating real well and breezed through five innings pretty quickly. First five-inning outing in the fall league for anybody, in part because he was so efficient. He didn't run his pitch count up very much. But, you know, he was interesting. And I talked to him, and it's interesting. I mean, he pitched 133 innings this year or so, which is a decent amount for a guy who came out to the fall league. But he said, you know, he pitched close to 150 the year before, and he spent a month in the big league bullpen where he didn't pitch a ton, and that the main goal for him was just building, you know, adding more innings. So if he does make the big league team at some point next year as a starter, you know, it's not a huge jump in innings going from 130, 135 to, you know, 160 or more, depending on his role, if he pitched, say, as a starter in AAA in the big league. So and I know you enjoyed too, Jonathan, you know, talking to these guys after the games and what they were working on. Who stood out to you? You know, you were out here for a few days before I was, and we'll both be back for longer stints later. But who stood out to you, you know, interview-wise or talent-wise, performance that you saw on your trip here?
Right. So the first part of my time is, you know, running around getting the video interviews done for a whole bunch of content that will be coming your way soon on MLB.com. So there were those interviews, and a lot of guys, I feel like every year I'm more and more impressed with how polished these guys are in terms of their ability to talk in front of a camera. You know, the guys probably, Connor Green was a tremendous interview. He's got a good backstory, a little bit of an acting background, friends with Charlie Sheen. And then he went out and was 94 to 98 in his first outing and sawing things off. Greg Allen, a really, really good interview. Speed guy, you know, kind of knows his job. I talked to Tyler O'Neill after he hit that long home, you know, that big home run that Jared Sandberg talked about. And then I want to throw out one guy. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but one like really, really under the radar guy that I liked is Tyler Spurlin. And it's possible I like him mostly because we were broadcasting a game and the game was crawling, a lot of base runners. And he came in and retired all seven hitters he faced, I think, with five ground ball outs. He must have thrown about 18 pitches total. He's a submariner. You know, he's one of these guys that, like, you're not going to have any idea who he is, and then suddenly he's going to pitch for 10 years in a big league bullpen. Last year, the thing that really stands out is a 3.38 ground out ratio, and it's 4.5 in his two outings so far. So he's a ground ball machine. He's going to pitch in the big leagues. And it was just sort of fun to see because he's not like he's not one of these guys, you know, 100 mile an hour guy because he drops down. But the stuff works, and he gets guys to beat the ball on the ground, and he can pitch a long time that way. Talking about Tim Tebow, but I think that we probably need to talk about him a little because we both can say that we have now seen in person Tim Tebow get a base hit in the Arizona Fall League. Now, it sounds to me that the ball you saw was hit a little bit more squarely than mine. You know, he got off the, I think it took him 14 at-bats to get his first hit, and it didn't take him that much longer to get another one. You know, it's still a curiosity. It's still, if you look at the thing that amazes me, Jim, I posted video of his first hit, and I was keying in on him, so I didn't even see where the ball went. There are a lot of haters out there, which I don't totally get. It kind of makes me want to root for him a little bit more. And then there are a lot of people rooting for him. He's very polarizing. But people loved it. Just the action on that tweet alone with the video was insane. You know, people are fascinated by what he does or doesn't do.
Yeah, no, and he was a polarizing guy as a football player too. And you get people who are upset that he's maybe taking an opportunity away from somebody, and other people are interested in seeing him. I did not independently verify this information, but I was talking to a scout about him yesterday. And he said that somebody told him that attendance this year at Scottsdale games is up like 45% because Tebow's on the Scorpions. I had another scout yesterday who texted me early in the morning, and he said, hey, let me know if Tebow's in the lineup tonight because I'll get over there and watch him if he is. And he wasn't because he's off to do SEC Network duty, so he wasn't. But I did see probably his best at bat of the Fall League, Jonathan, and he got behind 1-2 to Trey Ball of the Red Sox, fouled off a couple pitches, took a couple pitches, and then took a 92 mile an hour fastball, hit a hard line drive the other way. And as you might imagine, the Scottsdale crowd got very excited about that. So, you know, I think we kind of are of a like mind on him as a prospect. I mean, he's 2-for-20 now, facing by far better pitching than he would have seen instructional league. And at the same time, you know, it's a small sample size. I'm not saying you can make all the judgments you need to from 20 at-bats. But at the same time, these guys aren't, you know, the same quality pitching you'd face in the big leagues. I just think it's too much of an uphill climb. But to his credit, and, you know, he gets a lot of media attention, which in the league try to manage well. I mean, he stays positive. You talk to him after his first hit. Yeah. I mean, he's out here, you know, trying to do what he can. Like I said, it's an interesting story. A lot of attention on him, you know, as you pointed out, both positive and negative. You know, he's a polarizing guy, always has been. But, you know, I think the Fall League itself has got to be thrilled Tim Tebow's here because people are coming out and watching him play. And I saw a lot of Tebow T-shirts the one game that I was at that he was in the lineup.
Yeah, and without question. And I'll give him credit for this because, you know, I asked him about the fact that a large majority of his at-bats, you know, he's rolling over on a lot of balls and hitting, you know, with relatively weak contact ground balls to first and some to second base. And he has, you know, he said that that's one of the things that he's trying to address, and his two hits were both going the other way. You know, so he's clearly trying to work on things and then apply that into games with a huge learning curve to overcome. Yes, you and I are on the same page, but I'm sure that people will continue to watch with interest, even if it's negative interest, over the course of the rest of the Fall League. I'm sure we'll be able to keep talking Fall League over the next couple of podcasts as we continue our coverage from then. Jim, enjoy the rest of your stay, and I'll see you back in Arizona at some point in a few weeks prior to the Fall Stars game.
Yeah, no, sounds good. And I'll tap the Fall League one more time here before we sign off. If you're a baseball fan, my two favorite events to cover are the College World Series and the Arizona Fall League. And you come out here, you're going to see a lot of future big leaguers. The crowds are, it's not like spring training. It's very easy to get around. If you live in a, like you and I both do, Jonathan, in a part of the country where it gets cold in November, there's certainly worse places to be in November than Arizona.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Well said. And, who needs Tim McMaster? We can run this ship on our own. We'll try to again next week, in fact. Thanks for tuning in to this week's Pipeline Podcast.